Hi.
Hi.
Who are you?
I am Almar, and I'm an addict.
What kind of addict?
Attention addict. I love attention. Any attention.
And what are we doing here?
We're making a podcast.
What is that about?
It's about the things like people's stories, how they ended up where they are, ended up doing what they're doing. And it was supposed to be about something else, but I ended up with this.
Mm-hmm. Who are those people?
These are my friends. Basically my network, because I wanted to make a show about me, but I didn't really have anything to talk about. So I ended up looking at the network. The network was interesting, so I kind of thought, okay, I can maybe make something with this.
So do you have already a name for this podcast?
Yeah, it's called The Bunker. How the hell did we end up here?
And how is it connected to the theme?
How the hell did we end up here? So basically people's stories and how they went from A to B and then to C, and with coincidences, decisions, traumas, basically anything that moves you to the direction or the point where you are.
Mm-hmm. So how often are you going to have this podcast?
I'm not sure, but maybe like two times a month, mm-hmm. three times a month.
So do you take yourself seriously enough? Do you have some sponsors?
Yeah, like every other professional podcast, then of course I have sponsors. I have the Oat Bar. That's the greatest thing in Kalin. Sells amazing oatmeals and skyr. Mm. Everything is handmade. And it's available from 8 to 3 during the weekdays, closed on the weekends, but you can order on Wolt as well. And it's a place that you really want to go. Healthy, yet tasty.
And then I have
a company called Alfred. It's alfred.cz. It's a place where you can find jobs. You can set up a job watch. You can get notified whenever there's a cool job coming along. And it's a great solution for anyone who is either looking for a job or wants to change jobs, because you can find the right job without spending time looking for it. It's available in Czech, English and Slovak. And check it out. Alfred.cz. Yeah, those are the guys. Welcome to The Bunker. You're about to listen to episode number 2 of my conversation with Craig, the American barber in Prague. In the first episode, he explained his life in the US, depression, heart disease, and a lot of other dramas. In this episode, we start where Craig is explaining how coming to Prague started a new chapter in his life. We talk that, American politics, masculinity, Eurovision, and a few other things. Enjoy. So I remember I came to the old salon where you just had kind of a room in the back. Mm-hmm. And it was nice. It was because it was about you. I mean, that place for me was about you. Then you opened the new salon, which is really cool, like with three chairs.
Mm-hmm.
Super cool chairs, really nice decor, and you have a bar and a piano and stuff like that. And how was this? I mean, because you don't speak Czech, you're not
yeah.
local. How was it to get this stuff done?
It takes a lot of help, you know. Again, I had Jonathan help me, you know. He's like, hey, I'll rent you a chair, you know. And, but it wasn't a salary or anything, commission, you know. So, and it was a really nice shop that he's got, but it's like, you know, unisex shop. But I was just going to do my barber thing. And I worked in just the regular part of the salon for at least two and a half years before that room opened up. And one of the things, a lot of the stuff I've done, it's just been kind of an organic thing. It's just kind of happened. But no master plan of mine, but I never marketed myself as like Craig, the hairstylist at Head Hair Salon. It was always the American barber in Prague.
Mm.
And that kind of happened because one of my clients was in like graphic design and did some, websites and stuff. And he's like, well, you need keywords. And so I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, well, wait for people to find you online. He goes, you're American and you're, you know, you're a barber and you're in Prague. I'm like, yeah, that's good. American barber in Prague, you know? And then I was just constantly out. I think I went to every hotel and gym and bar on Vasilovsky Namysty in Old Town Square, going around, introducing myself, giving cards, trying to offer discounts, going to all the networking groups. Luckily, I got tapped into most of those the first week I was here. And
that's like old school door-to-door sales.
Yeah. So you go and, you know, introduce yourself to the people. Mm-hmm. That's how Caffrey's, you know, I met, got talking to those guys. But, you know, you don't just drop it off. You sit in there and have a beer with them and talk, and they find out, like, well, you're 50 years old and you just up and moved. And I didn't think much about it, but that opened a lot of doors. And it just went from there. So really within a pretty short amount of time, a lot of people thought I owned that shop and that I'd been here for years. Mm-hmm. Because I was constantly out pushing. I mean, I let everybody know that, you know, no, it wasn't my place. But then that room opened up, and I set it up. And that first chair I bought, that's 1941 from Sicily. You know, just old chair, and had it reconditioned. And I put a small wet bar in there, because being from Kentucky, I do the Kentucky bourbon and that. And I started getting into, like, people wanting to interview me, starting to get into some magazines and things. And then one of my clients, you know, friend now that he was kind of asking me, because he's produces documentaries. He's produced for Discovery Channel and MTV and Life Network, stuff like that. And at the time he was asking me, he's like, hey, can you think of any ideas for a cool for a documentary? Yeah, he lives here permanently. His wife's Czech and he's got two kids. He goes, oh, you're always out meeting people and doing stuff. Can you think of an idea for a documentary? And I'm like, it just so happens I can. And at that time, just long story short, this was a boxing project. And we were working on it. It had a lot of potential. And then for various reasons, it didn't. And then especially me getting frustrated with the people we were trying to do this with. And then I'm like, hey, you know, I don't know how I'll do on camera, but at least we're in control. So, you know, I've done it with high fevers or whatever, but if, you know, if you paid for all the equipment stuff, I can pull it together for, you know, a few minutes in front of camera. So the first thing we did with a guy that I'd gotten to know a little bit, Vít Jedlička, who's the president of Liberland. And when I heard about that, I'm like, well, that's just freaking awesome. The guy is founding his own country. So I'm like, well, that would make a great interview. And again, I hadn't done it before, and we were trying to film it in that little room. And then we also filmed some around the city. I always like to inject some humor. So we were wearing top hats with cigars and one of these open antique tourist cars being, you know, filming as we drive to the castle. And anyway, we did that, and he sent it to producers that he'd worked with on some big shows and stuff back in Canada, and they really liked it, and they really liked me. So then we're like, okay, maybe we can do something. So we did a whole series of videos with City Spy, you know, Kenny Phipps owns. And that got me into doing all kind of stuff, you know, interviewing.
Yeah, that was kind of the first public exposure kind of
that. Yeah, well, I've been in some magazines and stuff like that. But, yeah, actually, I'm trying to figure out which came. Some of it, you know, there's a lot of stuff that happened. But, yeah, I think most of that probably had started. Some of it had started before that. Czech TV did a documentary on me here. And I'd already had that first magazine cover, which brought the guy from Czech TV to do that documentary. But anyway, I started getting in, you know, some of the media. And, you know, Kenny's a cool guy, and so is Brad. So he kind of gave me a little bit of free rein on subjects. And then the more people you meet, the more it opens. And I'm always, you know, keep your eyes and ears open and ask questions. And, you know, where somebody can say is no. And I always try to ask where they're not going to be uncomfortable to say no. But most people want to help you. You know, I want to help most people if I can. And one of the videos started, and it was you know, I trained both my barbers, and they're Czech, and they're like my stepkids now. And like, you know, you come in the shop, you see it's like a family thing. So Elena is cutting this Czech guy's hair, and again, I just feel stupid. After 9 years, I still don't speak Czech, but after he's left, she's like, well, she goes, that guy produces one of the top television shows in Czech Republic, you know, Stardance. Mm. And he says that they have a hard time getting male dancers because it's such takes such a long time, you know, for celebrity dancers. And she said, I told him, what about you? So he's like, well, you know, tell me a little bit about him. So anyway, I was like, he actually was said it might be a possibility. I'm like, well, hell, give me his contact info. So I contacted him. I'm like, hey, if you get some time, I'd like to talk to you about it anyway. See, you know. And then we talked about it, and it would have been a possibility, but you have to have enough check for live interview. So I'm like, well, I don't really see that happening. I said, however, I have a video series. So how about if I interview you, and then you also, we do Stardance in my barbershop. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's what we ended up doing. So Jan came, I interviewed him, and then he brought Jan Onder, their choreographer and, you know, top winner, to teach me in my barbershop some dance moves. And then this pop star, Kate Mottl, you know, gorgeous, looks like a Czech Barbie. I'd met her at some different, you know, events. And then I contacted her because I didn't want to dance with a guy. So, you know, just by listening and asking, next thing you know, I'm like, well, hey, I got to start dancing in my barbershop. And they're teaching me steps on camera, and I'm dancing with a pop star. Uh-huh. So let's see what else we can do, you know. I think, again, if you look, you listen, if you really want something, and ask, you know. And, of course, I don't want to use anybody, but, like, a lot of people are more than willing to help you, you know. Mm. So, yeah, with the Stardance thing, like I said, so we did that and had a good time. And I was always talking to Jan, the producer, really nice guy. I was like, I find my way into doing some different projects. And then I found out he was also producing Eurovision, which I never heard of until I moved here. And probably within the last 5 years, something like that. And so then I'm like, oh, I'm doing these videos now. You're producing Eurovision. What's the chance of you getting Martina Barda in for an interview after she performs in Kiev, you know, a couple of years ago?
She was...
She represented the Czech Republic in Kiev. And extremely talented. Great. We've gotten to be good friends now. And she actually lives in Berlin, but she's Czech. And she's really a great jazz singer. But... you know, there's more pop music, and she did a hell of a job. But, you know, Czech Republic, it's not as big here as it is in some of the other countries. Mm. So, and I had no idea the audience is bigger than the Super Bowl, you know. But I was like, hey, you're producing, and what's the chance of getting her to come to the barbershop to do an interview and maybe sing? He's like, I think that's a great idea. So, and of course, I had only seen her in a couple of the videos and stuff. I just see this, you know, this beautiful, talented, you know, singer. I'm like, I don't know what this is going to be like. But she's really, really sweet, very humble, and funny.
She played at your birthday the other day, right?
No, that's Annie. That's a sax player. No, okay, Martina is a singer. Uh-huh. Yeah, she was in my Christmas show, though, Martina. Well, actually, both of them were.
Yeah, that's another thing. You have your own Christmas show.
So Martina, anyway, so she came, and, like, within 2 weeks of performing in Kiev, she had permission to do a new live version of that song. And then she sang some other, you know, of her songs as well. And we just, you know, had a blast. And I'm like, so that was my first exposure to Eurovision. And then her and I got to be friends, and I'm pretty good at branding and meeting, you know, making connections. And, you know, so I'm trying to help her. She's trying to help me. And then she's like, hey, I'm doing this concert. All these different people are playing. The former lead singer of Deep Purple and Rainbow, Joe Lynn Turner, is playing. And I think I can arrange it for you to interview him. I'm like, well, yes, that would be awesome. Hmm. So, and it's funny because one of my brothers had visited me just before that, and we were talking because one of the hits by Rainbow, and this, you're going back to like the 70s, early 80s, 70s, Stone Cold. It came on while he was visiting. We're both like, oh, man, I like that song, that group and stuff. And then, like, he goes back, and, like, 2 weeks later, I'm like, hey, dude, guess who's coming to my barbershop? You know? So I got the connection for that. And like I said, everything kind of...
It comes to you.
Yeah, it comes to you. And then I'm trying to, again, give out as much as I can as well. That barbershop's got a, it's got its own soul, kind of, you know? Yeah. And... it is me, all that stuff. People are like, who decorated? I'm like, that's my stuff. I'm not going to have somebody decorate this. So, you know, two of the three chairs, two of them are antiques. One's 1941, one's 1930. The pictures of the people on the wall, that's my family. Mm. The posters of the old hair products, those are reproductions. But that stuff, I grew up at my grandpa's shop or my dad's shop. Mm. You know, there's some other antiques from my grandfather and my father, stuff like that. And the shop, I set it up. It's a kind of a combination of the different family barbershops. So at the first, when I had that little room at the other salon, I did have a small little bourbon bar, you know, maybe dozen, you know, bourbons or something like that. And I wanted a bar, more of a bar in my barbershop, but I couldn't afford it. Mm. And a lot of people probably think, hey, he was 50 when he moved here. He had money to open all this stuff. I was completely broke in 7 or 8 months. You know, family had to bail me out a couple times over here. And I was working my ass off, but, you know, there were no real barbering going on when I moved here. You got to educate the public to it as well as to get people come in. And I was out constantly. And, you know, at first, too, when you move here, you party a bit, too. So you probably, you know, spend more sometimes more, than you need. And it wasn't replenishing as quickly. So, no, it got very dire straits the first year. But, you know, family back home, they really helped me. And, you know, it's much easier to give help than it is to take it, especially as a grown man. But I would have happily done it for them, you know, if the position would have been reversed. But, you know, again, other contacts I've had here, you know, friends, girlfriends, everybody kind of helping. And my friend Vanessa, which is awesome, I met her the first week or two that I moved here. She actually owns the building that I'm in. And she had brought her father over to get his hair cut at the previous place and liked it so much. She was like, look, I have a building 5 minutes from here. I'll, for what you pay for this little room, you need to come over here. So, you know, I wanted a bourbon bar. I wanted all this stuff, but I didn't have the money for it. Mm. And, you know, without residency, I couldn't get a loan. And I didn't really want to get a loan anyway. So you have to get really creative. And, again, like especially Prague, and everybody knows everybody. It's really a big village. Instead of 6 degrees of separation, it's about two. Mm-hmm. So, you know, through her and through some friends, there was contacts to Brown and Foreman, which is the parent company for Jack Daniel's. I had also, through some other friends, been talking to, like, Bullet Bourbon. But the Jack Daniel's thing came through, and they actually paid for that bar. Mm-hmm. And the timing just happened to be right on it because it was the 150th anniversary year of Jack Daniel's a few years ago. But me already being in the media some and then being from the South, and I think, you know, from where I grew up, the Jack Daniel's distillery just be a few hours away. It happened to work out, so they built that bar. There's several things in that, especially the bar area, that friends have given me, you know.
You got a bass guitar.
Yeah, that was given amplifiers. By really nice guy that's known one of my barbers, Lucas, since he was a kid. Another guy, Alan, a Danish guy, really great guy. That big carpet, he gave me that. You know, and people kind of want to contribute to it.
I think, and I think it's a place worth visiting, even if you don't have hair or beard, you, just to see. It's a really nice place, and well, I know that you're hosting events there and stuff like that, so people have a chance to come.
Well, and it's the thing, it's like the events, you know, like, because not everything, I mean, obviously I want to make a living, you know, I want to make money, but it's not all about money, you know, and the events, I usually lose money on most of them, but it's fun. So, and it does generate its own energy, its own business, and in its own way. I've had people play that little bar that have sold out stadiums. You know, you have people coming in there and just start jamming, you know. Like Martina, another guy she brought in, well, getting back to Jolynn Turner. So she got Jolynn in, and I'd never interviewed anybody like that before. Now, for him, there's tons of research that you could do. But I didn't want to, you know, like with what you're doing. As for me, it's not shock journalism. It's not hard-hitting journalism. I want people to have a good time, and you reveal the person. So I'm like, oh, awesome. You know, I got this guy coming in for an interview. And I've done my research, and I made my notes. But right before him and his wife came in, the manager came and said, look, we are really way behind. You got 10 minutes, 15 tops. I'm like, well, damn. Even if you're a professional interviewer, that ain't easy to build a rapport in 10 minutes. But as him and his wife, you know, my place, as you've been, and you're stepping down into it, and you're kind of like entering, oh, it's, in a way, people like it's almost like a movie set in a way, you know. So you're coming into a bit different world, definitely into classic Americana when you walk down those steps. So him and his wife are coming down, and they're stopping and smiling, looking around, and he was like, you know, introduce himself, you know, Jolynn Turner. And I think one of the things about getting older is I can tease people. Mm. I'm always do that anyway, but I mean, I can joke with them to where if I was a lot younger, it might come off as disrespectful. Like, you know, teasing a president or, you know, a rock star. But being a bit older, you can get away with more stuff. You know, you're being genuine. You're not trying to be a smartass. But anyways, like Jolynn Turner, I'm like, Jolynn, that sure don't sound like a boy from New Jersey. That sounds like a Southern boy. And then he was like, that's a story in its own. And he goes, you know, I recognize your accent because he asked me where I'm from. And I'm like, Louisville. Well, that's how you would say Louisville, Kentucky. If you're from there, Louisville. Not even a lot of Americans wouldn't know what the hell I said. And he's like, my ex-wife is from there. So then his wife comes, we get chatting, and they want to know, it's like, this operating barbershop? I'm like, well, yes, that's primarily what this is, you know. Mm-hmm. So we go into the bar area, and I ask him, because some of these older guys, like the rocker, they may not drink anymore. I'm like, do you still drink some bourbon? And he's like, oh, yeah. So I got out one of my special ones, and we started talking. And I mean, we just hit it off immediately. And I'm like, oh, shit, I guess we should be doing this in front of the cameras. But they were there at least an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And then...
Not the 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. And the manager's like, beg, please, we got to go. And then, Joe and his wife, they told me several times before they left, they're like, look, this is one of the best interviews we've ever had. You know, and we need to continue at dinner, you know, something like that. But, you know, it leads to its own thing. Mm. And we didn't do it, but somebody transcribed that whole episode. And it's on several rock forums. And, you know, but I, you know, that led because I'd met, you know, Martina. And before that, because I'd met Jan. And with Joe, I'm like, all right, man, I'm not a musician. I can play the radio, you know. But I'm going to sing with you because then I can say I vicariously play with Deep Purple and Rainbow. So, and I gave him one of those old guitars that I got in his shop. You know, he had that during the interview. So we did the last bit of Hush, you know. And then I said, hey, man, bucket list for me. You're up on stage. I'm going to get up with your backup singers. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you can turn my microphone. I don't care, you know, but you can turn it off. But I want to get up with you. And he's like, hell, I don't care. He goes, you got to look for it. And then the producer like, I don't care. You know, I'm like, awesome, you know. I want to rock out on stage with Jolynn Turner. And the only reason I didn't do it was it's kind of like a charity concert, I think, that they normally do. And it was 10 or 12 groups, but they were also playing with each other. Uh-huh. And it's kind of like the saying we had back home, don't wear out, you're welcome. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to be completely in the way for this totally self-indulgent thing. But I told him, I was like, hey, you come back next time if you just have an opening group. My ass is getting up there.
If you need any help, I'm more than happy to sing a Deep Purple song with you.
Yeah, yeah, we can do that.
But I guess, listening to you and that, like, the kind of stories, the people, the connections that you make. But I've often wondered about, like, with hairdressers and barbers and people that are frequently meeting their clients one-on-one, and silence is usually not what you want there. So there's a lot of talking, and I guess, are you like a shrink? I mean, do you hear these kind of things?
Well, people open up at all kind of stuff with you, you know, and again, you got a captive audience, you know, and my shop too, they're in there for about an hour, you know. Some of the guys, if they get like the, you know, especially tourists, they're like the gentleman package where they're having hot towel treatment and whiskey tasting and all that, they might be there for a couple hours. But you're sitting around, you know, talking about all kind of stuff. And they either, the people that know me, they either want to ask me what the hell I'm up to, you know, and I'm always trying to find out what, you know, especially somebody the first time and what kind of job they do. And you get, you know, finding out about the person. And I have a lot of people come to me. They'll just let me do whatever I want as far mm-hmm. like, hey, what do you suggest for my hair or my beard or whatever? But to do that properly, you really need to know a little bit about the person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to get a style that besides fitting their, you know, bone structure and their hair type and all, fits their personality and their lifestyle. You know, as I always ask the guys, are you actually going to spend any time working on your hair? Will you use any hair products? I'm up now. Mm-hmm. Am I going to see you in a few weeks or is it going to be a few months? You know, we need to change it. But yeah, you know, you're talking about that kind of stuff initially, but you get to, like I said, you get to know each other, and there's a lot of interesting characters come in there, and I kind of have like a rolling Rolodex in my head.
Hmm.
I don't know if they still have Rolodexes or not.
How was it? Was it in, I think you mentioned it once, you were, wasn't it Atlanta, where you were close to like some CIA field office or something?
Well,
or FBI, or
you got all kind of guys. Like, I mean, all up and down, you know, from intelligence agents or special forces or cops or business people or whatever. But yeah, one had been a former NSA bureau chief. You mm-hmm. know, I had another actually before I came here in '92. A guy was cutting his hair. He was just getting ready to retire from the CIA, and I was asking him. I'm like, are they really going to know what the hell I'm doing over there? And he's like, they will know where you stay. They will know, you know, much more than you realize.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I'm a very curious person, and I like a lot of the, you know, it's only a conspiracy until it's proven, yeah, or, you know. So, you know, like, obviously you don't expect to get a lot of classified, you know, information, but, you know, guys open up, and if you ask enough different type guys from different, you know, backgrounds, you know, might be a government guy, it might be a mobster. You know, but then you start, you find out some interesting things, you know, and hey, it doesn't mean all of it's right, but it gives you a hell of a lot of insights. So that's, yeah, another thing that I've always enjoyed. Like I said, it could be on any subject, but you just meet a lot of different people and, you know, I ask.
But do people share something intimate with you? Like, no.
Yeah, I mean, guys going through divorces or whatever it might be. Yeah, I mean, you just over the years. I really wish, you know, you kept a journal because you can't necessarily remember it all right off.
Mm.
But like, say if I'm hanging out with my brothers and stuff, all these, as you go, you know, the stories start coming to mind more and more. And like some, you know, nightmare divorce stories and stuff over the years. But it was funny, about the time I was getting divorced, a couple clients who I knew really well were getting divorced at the same time. And then I decided, I'm like, I think I want to check out, you know, what Slavic, you know, people, Slavic women are like. And then one of them, he started going to Philippines. The other one was going to South America. So then, you know, each haircut, you come in, you talk about, you know, he's like, okay, what, how did it go? And both of those guys, one ended up marrying a girl from Brazil and the other married a girl from the Philippines, still married and happy as far as I know. Yeah, you get, you know, it could be anything from dating to, I was, like I said, had the great fortune to train with a few world-class type chefs when in my 30s. And like guys would be asking me cooking tips, you know, stuff like that. Or to go maybe do a little cooking demo at a, you know, for a private party, stuff like that. But yeah, the topics range, you know, all over. You know, as I've said to you before, like in my shop, I'm pushing basically, it's not just barbering. I'm pushing classic, how I view classic men's lifestyle, men's men. So it, you know, the barbering and the beards or the bourbon or the motorcycles, the barbecue, you know, the stereo, audiophile stuff. And it's, yes, women do that. But if it's, say, beer, the vast, you know, majority, you know, of the demographic are men. High-end audio equipment, yes, there are women that are into that. They appreciate that. But the main demographic for sales, you know, is that. You know, more and more women are driving Harleys and Indians. But their main demographic is, at least for Indian men, 40 to 60, you know. So I push as much of the classic type stuff as I can. And that's why, like I said, I have guest speakers in there some. I'm going to be doing that more. So if you have a guest speaker on whichever topic and you got 10, 12 guys having whiskeys sitting around listening to somebody, you know, interesting, ask some questions, you know, you're just having some drinks, and then it usually music and turns into a drunken sing-along.
So, yeah, as you're saying, I mean, a lot of the things that you're associated with here are kind of male dominated in some way, motorbikes, grilling, whiskey, barber, beards, and some of the music and some of these things that you have been connected to, and in some way I've thought about you as an idol for masculinity in some way, because yeah, you have all these different touch points, but it also makes me wonder, are you a dinosaur in this sense? You know, is this masculinity what is on the way out somehow? What do you think?
I hope it's not on the way out. I do occasionally feel like a dinosaur. You know, so but yeah, you know, it's, I think one thing too is the older you get, you know who you are, you know what you want, and you know, in this culture now, so much of being offended and stuff. I'm not out to offend somebody, but if I do, if I'm offended myself, I don't care. So what? Nobody said you're going to go through life without being offended. And if you stray from the mainstream narrative now, you're going to get some shit. But I've gotten to the point, I'm like, bring it on. Okay. So, you know, I'm going to, you know, I've always questioned things. But, you know, as you get older, too, you realize most people are bullshitting their way through life. Through their career, most people are still thinking they're not good enough or knowing really what they're doing, that somebody else is probably better at that. And just, you know, if something is presented to them in a way of authority or if it's in print, they just assume that it's true. You know, so if people, especially stuff that I do have more knowledge of or that I study or whatever, I want to say, hey, you want to debate me on men's hairstyle or men's fashion or whatever. At some point, I'd like to get into that so much. I'm trying to, if I can finish it, I got the notes together, trying to write my first book, which is on barber culture and barbering, mostly for barbers. But if at the very least, what I do is the way I do it. You know, somebody else, you know, like my brother, other people know every bit as good a barber as I am. And we do it differently, even though we're brothers, you know, but he's not doing media and doing stuff like that. He's not as comfortable wanting to do that kind of stuff, but he's every bit as good as I am. And we do it a bit differently. So you have a lot of, you know, so-called experts. And you'll see, oh, I've seen these articles. I'm sure you do because you got an awesome beard. But for years, oh, beard, it has, you know, fecal bacteria. It's been tested. I'm like, well, bullshit. You could take the hottest model, test her hair on her head. It's going to do the same thing. Now, if somebody's a nasty son of a bitch that never washes his face after, you know, or his hands, yeah, maybe you'll find that. But they get on. Matter of fact, I was in a magazine article here a few years ago, and they were interviewing me. They did a beard issue, and you know, really nice guy that interviewed me. But I'm like, I'm telling you right now, that's bullshit. but it sells papers, so they still had some of that in there, you know. And if it comes to styles, or you have somebody, oh, the beard trend's over. I'm like, because some little, you know, fashion guy at a, I don't care if it's GQ or Esquire or what, he's probably some young guy who can't grow a beard, going to try to tell men that the beards are over. You know, this kind of shit. I'm like, you want to debate that with me? You're going to tell me you know more than I do on that subject? Or on fashion, you look at this, some of the garbage out right now, you know, and again, to each their own, but some of the stuff, I'm like, is that your girlfriend's clothes or yours? Because they're trying to feminize men, and they have been for a long time, you know, and even for the women, I'm like, take a look, I can't remember the goofy woman's name, the editor for Vogue. Now, that's one of the persons setting the trends, and she looks like a psycho clown. I mean, this is who you're going to listen to to tell you the way you should look and dress.
Yeah.
You know? So, but they've been pushing that shit down, you know, this toxic male stuff for a long time. I normally, of course, this year people aren't traveling much, but I normally get a lot of study abroad students from the U.S. too. And they're asking, like, you know, what to do. And, of course, I'm learning from them and they're learning from me. And I'm like, boys, whatever BS they told you back home, that doesn't apply here, you know? And I'm not trying to tell you to go meet every girl you can meet here and stuff, but I'm like, you got to man up, you know? And they're like, on some of these campuses, they can't even ask a girl out because it can be considered sexual harassment.
Yeah.
You know, so it goes, there's different extremes, you know?
Yeah.
And each generation, I look at, you know, my dad's generation, I'm sure, was tougher than me. My grandpa's generation is tougher than that. Some of the shit that they had to go through in life growing up, you know. And you hear somebody like Greta Thunberg, you've stolen my childhood. I'm like, well, my grandpa, one of them was out on his own. He was like 9 years old getting beaten trying to work on a farm, you know. So, yeah, other guys have some tough, you know, tough times. Or the guys who went through World War II, you know, you're going to have maybe some issues if you get thrown into a situation like that when you're a teenager and survive it. So, you know, not that I'm, you know, I have my role models that I kind of look at.
And who are those?
Well, I mean, some of it's cliche, but like John Wayne, Steve McQueen, you know, a lot of these old guys from the movies and stuff, but also obviously more real, like my uncles, you know, my, you know, family and stuff. My two of my uncles, one's 90, the young one's 87. You know, the 87-year-old still running about a 150-acre farm on his own. He was retired. He was the head of the undercover cops in Louisville before that. Like, you know, some of the older guys, you know, people listening to this might know who Charles Bronson was. They could have been twins, you know, but tough, you know, good guy.
That was a guy from Death Wish.
Yeah. Well, they even look alike. They could have been.
I'm old enough to remember those movies.
Well, they could have been twins, but he was every bit as bad in real life. But, you know, good guy. You know, you're going to stand up for what you believe in. You're going to protect others, you know, and, it's not that women can't do a lot of this, but, you know, it's good to be a man and it's good for a woman to be a woman. You know?
But I feel like this, what we're talking about now, or what you started talking about with this, masculinity versus where it's being, in which direction is kind of being either pushed or developed, depending on how you look at it. But it appears from the distance that in the U.S. it's very polarizing somehow, that you have certain areas or states in the U.S. where, you know, it's more traditional, it's more like it has been, and the values are different. And then you have other areas which are developing differently, and you know, who knows in the end what's going to be right and what's going to be wrong. But isn't this reflected in the politics as well there? Like, with now we have the presidential elections coming up. How do you see these things? I mean,
well, it's definitely polarizing. And again, I've been over here for over 9 years now. So, and I've only visited the U.S. twice in that time. So, yeah, I'm watching it from the news. And, yeah, it's you're watching it implode. So it's crazy. And hopefully it doesn't. You know, but we saw how fast the Soviet Union went down. But it's going to get crazy. You know, we got about, 6 weeks, 7 weeks or something till the election. And it's going to get crazier until then. Mm. And then right after, it's like somebody could give me a free first class round trip ticket this year and I would not go. You know, I hope everything calms down, but it's so divided. And of course, the media is a big part of it. And I don't care whether it's the mainstream or if it's, it could be CNN or Fox. They're all pushing a bunch of shit. Mm. And they're trying to keep people, you know, scared and upset and divide people. I think it's going to be a big reset this year.
Who do you think will win the election? Trump or Biden?
I've already got money with a couple of friends, and I tell you, hey, give me Vegas odds, I'll take more. Trump's going to take it.
Mm. And why do you think that? I mean, most of the world thinks he's an idiot, and he might be an idiot. He might not be.
Well, you know, that's the thing, you hear that. But first of all, I think most of us anymore are forming our opinions on sound bites without actually doing any freaking research. And whether you like him or not, you know, even politicians that I don't like, I'm not going to assume that they're an idiot. You don't get that far. You might be a corrupt asshole, but you're not an idiot, especially somebody that's been as successful as he has. And I have constantly, I mean, almost every day in the shop, people want to ask me about politics and stuff. And I'm like, hey, I'll listen. You know, I'm pretty freaking conservative. I'm neither party, but I'll listen to other views and maybe you'll change my mind, you know, at least on certain issues. But I don't want emotion involved in it. I want fact. So we'll see what happens. I think there's going to be a lot at play. Personally, I believe there has been a war going on ever since he was elected.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a shadow war going on. And, you know, I'm not going to speak for any people publicly that if anything was given in confidence. But over the years, you meet enough different people everywhere from, again, intelligence agents to mobsters and stuff that can confirm certain things. So if this stuff, you know, comes out, if it's true, I think it is, but we'll see what happens. But no matter how this election goes, I think hopefully it doesn't happen, but I think martial law's could very likely happen. Mm. And I hope civil war doesn't happen, but it's, you know.
It's possible.
Oh, yeah, very possible. Mm. I'm surprised there hasn't been more shootings, you know, which actually a lot of people won't agree, but it shows you the restraint of the gun owners. You got 70 million gun owners that you haven't had more people fighting back.
Mm.
But, you know, you can label stuff whatever you want and make it sound good or bad.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's what's happening is that, you know, people are not looking beyond the headlines and to the facts.
BLM, Black Lives Matters. Well, obviously Black Lives Matters. But if you look at it, the freaking co-founders, one of them was busted for child trafficking. The other, Rudy Giuliani, imprisoned for a terror bombing like 20 years ago. That's your co-founders.
Mm.
And then the money, when they tracked it, goes to Act Blue, which funds the Democratic Party.
Mm.
You know, so there's plenty of people conspiracy. I'm like, look, follow the freaking money trail. Take a look at it. Ask some questions, you know. Mm. And I can. As many people that agree with me, there's as many that'll disagree with me.
Mm.
But, you know, that's my opinion. And until it, you know, is shown otherwise, then, you know, I'll go with that. But I didn't think of him one way or the other. I haven't voted in a long time. I'm trying to get registered now to vote for this one. But whether you like, you know, give a shit about the American election or not, it's going to affect
the world.
You know, we'll see how this goes. I mean, nobody can say for sure. Like, nobody would have, you know, I was telling my friends that 2020 was going to be crazy, like 2020 vision. A lot of stuff will start coming to light. Of course, nobody could have had an idea that, we're going to close the world down, you know. So we'll see what happens. Personally, I think, you know, I was looking at video from the last Davos, and they just outright were saying the only thing stopping us from this global you know, world that we're looking for is Trump in the U.S., and we need to stop it at all cost.
Mm.
So with this election, it will go one way or the other. Mm. It will either shift into that, or there'll be a reset. You know, that's how I'm viewing it anyway, right or wrong. That's how I view it. So we'll see what happens with all this. But I think we're in for a crazy ride, and there's no telling what might happen over the next 6-7 weeks until that election.
Mm. What I find interesting is that the if you look at the U.S. And the society, that is very much driving to the direction of gender equality and so on. And the two options in the elections are a 74-year-old and a 78-year-old
mm-hmm.
man.
Yeah.
And it's a really, I think it's a relatively poor, you know,
option. That's really most countries, except for the recent times, you know, like Scandinavia, there's some more like in Finland and stuff like that. And, but Trump's got the most diverse cabinet there's ever been.
Yeah,
and he has more minorities and females and stuff, and so it's you do have a couple old guys fighting over this stuff,
yeah,
you know, obviously, but we'll see. You know, there's one thing, like, especially when I was younger, I'm like, hey, you want, you know, a young guy in office and stuff like that, or, you know, women, like, well, you're a woman or whatever, but there's also something to go with experience. You know, and now Trump, for his age, you would never guess he's that age.
Mm.
And actually, you look at most of these presidents, within a year, 2 years, how much they've aged. He looks the same, if not younger. Mm. And again, I didn't vote for him last time, but the main reason I pull for him now is he's the only one fighting the human trafficking and the pedophile networks.
Mm.
Some of that pedo stuff is just individual, you know, sickos, and then other of it's organized.
Mm.
And I think people got a little bit of glimpse in that with the Epstein stuff.
Mm.
And most of it hasn't been on people's radar, but they have no, I think more on that will come out. And then when people see what actually has been going on, I had some of the other day, but it's not like organized. I'm like, well, what about the NXIVM cult? 11 daycares around the center. I mean, around the world, rather. They had the Seagram's liquor heiresses were funding it. Mm. You had an actress from one of the most popular TV series in the U.S. attracting the young girls into it. You know, and there's case after case. They were convicted on all counts.
Mm.
But
this doesn't get a lot of press.
No, it doesn't get hardly any freaking press.
Mm.
You know, it's just like haven't seen it in the press too much. Trump's been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize twice this last week.
Yeah.
You know,
He's doing a miracle in the Middle East, but yeah. nobody wants to talk about it.
Well, also with Kosovo and Serbia, and then he's the only one to have gotten talks started with North Korea.
Mm.
You know, I'm not an economist, I'm not a politician or anything, but even as a kid, I'm like, why are you not talking to him? Well, you don't recognize him. I'm like, well, you might not recognize him, but hell, they're there, you know? Maybe put sanctions or something, but they're actually there, so how are you ever going to fix it? Or is it maybe being used for something else?
So, I've been speaking here for a while. I actually found out, Craig, that I know less about you than I thought, or I knew you less than I thought, but I guess that's
you've lost all respect for me now.
No. but, so kind of, you know, it's a series of coincidences, events, decisions, different turns that kind of take you from Kentucky, Atlanta, visiting Prague, going to the Ukraine, coming to Prague, finding a barber's chair in your first email, opening up a store, and then basically the whole universe here seems to open up for you, you know, Dancing mm-hmm. with the Stars, Santa Claus at Christmas, grilling, YouTube shows, you name it. It's kind of all over the place. And last night you were hanging out with the president, which I know you've told me. I know that you meet him. I mean, mm-hmm. you're friends with the former president. So all of this has kind of happened on some sort of an, what do you say? It's not a planned path, right?
No, they're loose plans, but yeah, you can't predict most of the stuff, you know. And again, it's just been kind of an organic thing. But again, I try to put myself out of my comfort zone, you know. And now I actually thrive on that. You know, I ended up like when I was younger, somebody told me, "Hey, you're going to go on stage for 350 people. You know, not quite sure what you're going to do, but get up there and do something." So I did that last year for Kofola. I did a little bit of consulting with the ad agency for the new Royal Crown. So then they had me come over to Ostrava to get on stage for 350 of their sales force from Czech Republic and Slovakia. And I was talking to the brand managers. I'm like, "Look, just you know, I don't speak Czech. And you also know I don't have a problem speaking. So you're going to have to tell me when to talk, because I don't know what the hell you're talking about except this campaign. And you're going to have to tell me when to shut up, you know." So, you know, that would have been very intimidating before, but I'm like, screw it. Let's just do it. Dog and pony show. So they get up there and they're like, "We want you to cut the CEO's hair on stage in front of all the sales force and do a little bit of stuff about the South, because there's Royal Crown Cola is a Southern thing." And while they're playing the commercials and they're talking about whatever they're talking about with that. So I'm like, okay, I'll figure something out up there. So you get up there and I'm like, "All right, we'll just push that Southern thing even more." So I'm like, "Dobry den, y'all." And then I'm like, "You know, you're all going to be representing this soft drink. Can any of you pronounce Royal Crown Cola? Because that's not how you pronounce it. It's Royal Crown." So then the CEO, I'm like, "All right, big boss, let me hear you say it." You know, and he's like, "Roo-roo-roo." I'm like, "Well, now y'all see how us foreigners have a hard time saying, you know, some of the sounds that you're making." But, you know, that kind of stuff, I thrive on it, you know. I was on stage for, you know, 150-something hairdressers in Germany. I teach in Germany some. And, you know, first time, I'm like, "Man, what the hell? I'll do it my way, you know, right or wrong. I'm just going to do it my way and enjoy it, and you own it, you know. And if I screw something up, I'll own it, you know." But I'm like, you realize at some point, it's you. You know, whether somebody likes it or not, hey, this is the way I do it. This is what I'm going to do. Take it or leave it, but I'm going to do it this way, you know. So it's led to a lot of different things. And I'm my own worst critic. So the Santa Claus thing actually happened. Some friends here, Vanessa, she was having this Christmas party at Hard Rock for like 500 or 600 people. And I didn't have the beard then, just a short goatee. But I did have the natural belly. So, and it was funny because one of the girls that asked me, she kept telling me, "It's something I want to talk to you about." I'm like, "Oh, hey, someone talk to me about something." And then finally, she's like, "Will you be Santa Claus?" I'm like, "Well, that's like a kick in the nuts." You know? I'm like, "Great." She's not interested in going out. I'm fat and gray. So she wants me to be Santa Claus. So they're like, "Look, you're there for the, you know, it's an adults, it's a party at Hard Rock, and you're there for the women to sit on your lap for photos." I'm like, "Oh yeah, I can do that." So they just rented me a cheap outfit because you don't, you know, have Santa Claus here really. Now you're starting to get it a little bit. But, you know, I had a good time, but later I'm like, "God dang it, I could have done this or I could have done that." But then everybody was like, "Oh my God, you were the best Santa Claus."
Yeah, I can vouch for that. Yeah. I've seen you. You're super authentic.
Well, after that, I purchased like the Coca-Cola Santa Claus outfit I had shipped from the U.S.
And then that's the one that I've seen.
Yeah, and then like a year before last, I bought another like a rockin' one that's a big calf-length red leather fur coat that a Kurt Russell movie was on Netflix a couple of years ago. But in the U.S., Santa Claus can make some bucks, and it's usually retired guys. And one of my brother's clients came in for years. About 5-6 weeks time, he'd make about $40,000 US. I'm like, that's a nice side gig here. But I've just done it for fun, really, you know, made enough to pay for the outfits and stuff that I bought. But it opens all kind of doors too, and it's a lot of fun. And it was one of those things too, I'm like, shit, I think I'm like the first Santa Claus in Czech Republic. And that's got to be certain things too. It's like I did a barber demonstration, like I said, in Bratislava, and they're like, "This has never happened in our country before." I'm like, ooh, it's like uncharted territory. Then you're like, what else can I do that I can maybe be the first or one of the first to do? So that just leads to, you never know where it leads. And you never know who you meet doing that sees that. to doing the other. Like that one magazine cover, like I said, with the gun and the flag and the Bible, I'm like, I'm either going to look like a complete horse's ass. But, you know, how often do you get a magazine cover? So I'll at least give it a try. And then that led to the Czech documentary on me and stuff. And again, you never know who sees what. You never know who's going to hear this, you know. There was a guy, he goes by Haircut Harry, it's his YouTube channel. And he basically gets his haircut all over the world, and he films it. And Harry's not really going to, he's a great guy, but he's not going to talk, really, unless you ask him something. And a lot of barbers don't talk.
Hmm.
So then I found out when I was reading the reviews, the comments in the video later, ASMR, I'd never heard of this before, but some people are just listening stuff just for the droning sound. So I'm like, well, you picked the wrong guy if you wanted, you know, somebody not talking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of his videos are over 3 million views, and I think mine now were over 1.1 million views.
When he came to your place.
Yeah. So when he was in Prague, he came to me, and we did like, you know, 1.1 million views so far. You know, but with that, when he contacted me, I wrote him back immediately. And he's like, wow, some people never get by. I was like, well, I'm not stupid. I see, you know, I'll make time for you. And when he came, I'm like, look, we need to move furniture or whatever. You want a good video? I want a good video. You know, again, who knows what? And I've had a lot of people. I've even sent clients to my brother in Atlanta because they've seen that video. And I've had clients come visit me because of that video. And then other people see it and opens up. It might be something in the barber territory. It might be, you know, something else. You know, like the grilling show. You know, that stuff just kind of happened through other friends. And Stream, we were talking about doing other series.
Mm.
And I told him, I'm like, look, to be honest, I'm out of practice. I said, I'm single. I go out to eat almost every meal. It's so cheap in Prague. And I said, I can get it back quick enough, and I can make up shit in front of a camera. But they're like, well, we want to, before we do these other series, we want to do this. So we'll pair you with a Czech chef that people know. And it's as much about you guys having fun as anything. Now, the fun thing about that show is people that don't know me, that don't necessarily know that I don't speak Czech, but they also don't realize that the other chef doesn't really speak English.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of help go over, you know, with the writing, although they got to put it all in Czech. And then they'll tell me the last Czech word that he's going to say, and then I ad lib.
Yeah.
You know. But it's a lot of fun. It can be intimidating when you have a crew sitting there, but you're like, yeah, screw it. Let's go. Let's have fun.
But this is the thing, Craig. You know, we could sit here for 5 more hours and talk about this kind of stuff that you kind of randomly got into and out of a network where you kind of use this, as I said, you're a connector somehow, you're connecting different people. But how do you see this, like, okay, if we had a time machine, let's go forward 5 years, where are you?
Well, hopefully bigger series. Right now, my buddy Carl, who you met that did the cooking show, you know, at my party, he's got his national television show in Germany. And his producers are interested in him and I possibly doing a German TV show. I'd like to get into more of that kind of stuff. It's fun, you know.
But do you see yourself go away from the barber?
No, I'll always do it. It'll be a little bit less, you know, part of it because my back's so screwed up that I'm intentionally cutting a bit less hair. But no, I plan on teaching more. Like I said, you know, I go to Germany some. I've been to Sweden. And a lot of the students want to see about coming to Prague so they could do a master class with me. But also it's a tax write-off, so I'll plan their weekends here. Americans as well could come over for a week or two. The barber, like I said, my grandpa cut hair till he was 85. I love what I do. But again, physically I can only do so many myself. And I also want time for these other projects. But everything, you know, radiates out of that barber chair.
Yeah.
So, again, men's lifestyle. You know, it's not that that's all I'm about, but it's I want to push that more. It's stuff that I'm interested in, you know. And I am going to start because I have events, and as we go, as the days will get shorter here going into winter, I'll start doing that more with the guest speakers and live music. I'm actually talking right now, start doing maybe even monthly a ladies' night. So we'll do different themes for that. Working on different videos. Right now, I just started writing some articles for Czech Leaders magazine. Last week was unusual. I actually had 3 articles with me come out in magazines. Monday, I've got a crew from Germany and TV coming to do a mini doc on me. I'm not even sure what the hell that's about, but I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll do that. Mm. Who knows what, you know, it may be not much of an audience. Maybe it's a big, I have no idea, but I'm like, yeah, okay, that's fun.
And you got some branded stuff as well. I mean, you're cooperating with those
Angry Beards, you know, which that showed my age a little bit. They had to explain Angry Birds, Angry Beards. I'm like, oh, shit, that's clever. I wouldn't, you know, it would have taken me quite a while to catch that probably. Mm. But no, it's a really nice company. Young guys started that. They were still in university here, young Czech guys. And they came in a couple of years or so ago to just ask me to take a look at some of their products. And as you see, I have no problem talking. So I'm just like, oh, blah, 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 you know? And the guy's like, wow, that's a lot of information. He goes, it's good, but I can't take it all in. I'm like, look, I think it's awesome that you all are doing this, and especially while you're still in school. So yeah, I'll be happy to consult with you some. And then they're like, well, we'd like to do a more premium line too, and we'll do the American Barber stuff. Mm. So we just came out. It took a long time to get this first beard oil, and it's American beard oil. But it's doing really well, and we're looking at doing other products. There's other stuff like that that I want to do, and merchandising, and I want to get, again, it's like everything. It's time and money. And one of my weaknesses is I get distracted because I get so excited by all these different projects. And then I have to try to rein it back in. What can I do now? And then right now, again, everything's up in the air. TV, movies, all that kind of stuff. A lot of that stuff's on hold. So, and the same thing for people traveling for workshops is still pretty much on hold. So thing I've been wanting to work on for a while, I'm trying to finish this book, but I want to do online training for barbers and also some online mentoring. So it could be a barbershop in Siberia. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think a cool video series at some point would be, you know, because a lot of them, they couldn't afford my workshops, you know, but to maybe pick a shop where somebody who definitely couldn't afford something like that, that I bring in sponsors and we supply them and get them trained and take them to be the top shop in their city.
Kind of like they do on the restaurant.
Yeah, just really hooking them up, you know, pay it forward and get it to, okay, we're going to train you, we're going to set you up, we're going to make you the top, and then we want you to continue with this. So I want to try to get that. That'll be one of the things I'll be concentrating on over the winter, is trying to get online. And then I got to do my YouTube channel up and start just, you know, you're not always going to have a crew. So some of the stuff, I got to have the equipment where I just do myself as well. Hey, three tips to getting a good haircut, or, you know, tips for make a cocktail or something, you know, throwing stuff like that out there. And then when it's available to get, you know, the more professional video and stuff done.
But if people want to, I mean, first of all, if people want to visit you, what's the name of the street? You're in Prague, Angel.
Yeah, Nabilidle 12, Nabilidle 12. And I'm right off the, about a block from the river.
And the nearest metro is
Andel, and then the nearest tram stop is right around the corner, is Zborovska. It's just, I mean, it's easy enough to find. It's a smaller sign, but it's almost like a little bit of a speakeasy, you know. Again, it's not about a high traffic flow through my shop. I've got two barbers. Only one of them works at a time because they're a couple and they have a baby. And I haven't found anybody else that I want. It's I'm more about the enjoying it and the quality than throwing a lot of people through there. But then we'll be doing more, like I said, guest speaker nights. Right now I'm talking about, I've got a lot of buddies that own restaurants and that are chefs because I do the barbecue stuff. Doing a way for people we can promote and have the restaurants come. Maybe we'll do some cooking workshops and then also just open house type thing to where they or me are not going to make a lot of, if any, money out profit off of it, but it's just a cool thing to do for promotion. So it might be my friend Daniele, he owns Meat Eater Steak and Wine. He's world ranked in steaks. Well, he was supposed to defend his title in Texas this year, but the COVID messed it up. But maybe he's there. They're maybe making steaks, and people aren't coming for a dinner with that, but they're getting samplings and stuff. Yeah. And now I'm friends with Alish, is the brewmaster for Budvar. Pavel Palus is the national brew champion for Kobylis beer. guys like that coming to actually do the beer tasting. Mm-hmm. So you would get a tasting from, you know, the brewmaster.
And if we want to see these events, that would be on your Facebook page.
Yeah, I'll be putting that more on my, like, the American Barber in Prague, which I need to put more on the Facebook, but, or the stuff under my name, and it's spelled differently, but you can see it on the, and then websites, AmericanBarberInPrague.com. You can see a lot of the stuff on my Instagram mm-hmm. account. Mm-hmm. You'll see different people have been in there. You'll see, you know, I had the Eurovision show, so you'll see different stuff. I don't know if the podcast is still up. Check TV did that with me. I think they put it on iTunes and Spotify, whether it's still on.
Yeah, we don't want to talk about all the podcasts on this podcast.
Yeah, so. But, well, the cool thing was the live music with them. And there's a lot of talented musicians in this country. Mm-hmm. And last night blew me away, the guy. Well, all of them. But anyway, no, it just some weeks we'll do more things and some weeks I might not. I get busy and I don't organize some stuff. And this, like I said, as the days get shorter coming into winter, and then I'm going to try to do a Christmas special. I did that a couple of years ago. So I had Matcha Rupert and Tonya Graves and Martina Barda and Annie with, you know, the Phenomenal Angels. And then my barbers, it's funny, I tell people when they watch this stuff, like that, it's about a 25 to 30 minute special. And for what we did, I mean, less than 3 days notice for maybe $500. And because everybody volunteered their time. But the elves in that are my, which you know, are my barbers, mm-hmm. you know, and everybody just took to it. We had a blast doing that. So depending on how things open with the borders, I'm wanting to do a jazz Christmas. And I've got some jazz legends who had already told me they would come from Berlin to do this, but that could be cut out at the last minute. Yeah. You know, we'll see what happens.
But people will just have to stay tuned on your social media. And I know that you usually post out whatever is happening at the barbershop. I mean, mm-hmm. and definitely go visit the barbershop. It's worth the visit just to see. It's been great having you, Craig. Thanks for coming. Who are you going to hang out with tonight? Prime Minister?
No, I think tonight probably my cats, you know. But, just chill out. But, yeah, I appreciate you having me. And as I mentioned earlier, at some point we need to do a podcast with you because you're one of the more interesting guys I've met here. And you're definitely out doing a lot of stuff. So, I appreciate you having me. And look forward to it.
Thank you guys for listening. You can follow me on Twitter, Midlife Crisis Warrior, same handle on Instagram. Stay tuned for the next episode. Write a review, tell your granny about this, anyone you know. I'm a sucker for attention, so I'll be happy for anything. Thanks a lot. See you. Bye bye.